All real living is meeting. These are the words of Martin Buber, an Austrian Jewish and Israeli philosopher. In this episode, we learn about this writer, scholar, literary translator, and political activist, whose life's work touched upon mysticism, social philosophy, religious phenomenology, philosophical anthropology, education, politics, art, and also, significantly, my favorite, because I think it has an effect on all the other areas, communication. Yes. And a side note for any listeners who, like me, might still be new to some fancier terms like phenomenology. According to Brown University, phenomenology is a philosophy of experience. For phenomenology, the ultimate source of all meaning and value is the lived experience of human beings. I find that self-awareness and consciousness are often words associated with phenomenology. I'm excited to delve deeper into this thinker, a thinker I was introduced to while at Ball State University in the Department of Communication Studies. So, let's get into it. Born February 8th, 1878 in Vienna, at that time, capital of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and a very multi-ethnic metropolis. He wasn't raised by his parents. They separated when he was very young, around 4. His mother, Elise, left his father, Karl Buber, an agronomist, to elope with an army officer. And in case you've never heard of an agronomist, as I hadn't, they're experts in the science of soil management and crop production. It was his father's parents who raised him instead, Solomon and Adele, his paternal grandparents. They were aristocrats who lived in Lemberg, what is now Ukraine. Their wealth and status came through mining and banking and commerce. Martin was homeschooled, at least until the age of 14, by his grandmother Adele, who was part of the 19th century Enlightenment movement. Adele wanted to modernize Jewish culture. His grandfather, Solomon, was a wealthy philanthropist who enjoyed studying the parallels of Midrashim, non-legal rabbinic lore, and Greek linguistics. Martin benefited greatly in this highly academic and affluent environment as a very pampered young man. Eventually, though, in his adult life, this financial security would be significantly reduced during World War II, when Germany came to occupy Poland, and in 1939, the Nazis expropriated the Buber estate. But, as we will see, his intellectual assets could not be diminished. While his grandparents were passionate about Jewish religious laws and texts, Buber was more interested in German poetry and the German philosopher, Immanuel Kant. He read Kant's writings when he was 14. Growing up, he easily learned languages, including Hebrew, Yiddish, Polish, German, French, Italian, and English. Pretty sure that's what we call a polyglot. As he got older, he started to consider Zionism, something that would continually shift throughout his adult life. He also became interested in Hasidic literature, which was based on a mystical Jewish movement founded in Poland in the 18th century, a less rigid practice than Orthodox Judaism. At the age of 18, in 1896, Buber began his studies in philosophy, religion, and art history at the universities of Vienna, Berlin, Leipzig, and Zurich. Between his studies, he met Paula Winkler, and the two married in 1901. Paula was an avid writer, using the pen name George Monk. Raised Catholic, Paula converted to Judaism, and the two took up the study of Hasidism together. Finishing his doctorate, I know we're going through quite the chronological timeline. Finishing his doctorate from Vienna in 1904, his dissertation was on mysticism. He was also influenced by existentialism through the writings of Kierkegaard, Nietzsche, and Dostoevsky. His academic studies focused on theories of individuation and heroic nihilism, after reading Nietzsche's Zarathustra. Heroic nihilism makes me think of stoicism. It's basically facing up to hopelessness in spite of it all. So maybe not completely nihilistic? Which makes sense if he was also curious about existentialism. And as I had mentioned, he did begin to investigate the ideal of Zionism, which he became considerably active in from 1900 to 1916. But in later years, his participation would begin to decline. In 1916, he met Franz Rosenzweig, an intellectual friend. Franz invited Buber to lecture at his Free Jewish Adult Education Center. The two collaborated together on a project, initiated by a Christian publisher, Lambert Schneider, to produce a new translation of the Bible into German. Rosenzweig also helped Buber secure a university position in Jewish religious studies and ethics at the university in Frankfurt, where he would teach from 1924 to 1933 until the Nazis dismissed him. After the Nazis stopped his public lectures and teaching activities, at age 60, he immigrated to Palestine. There, in 1937, Buber was invited to teach at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. And after the establishment of the State of Israel, with the beginning of mass immigration from the Islamic countries, Buber initiated the founding of the Teachers Training College for Adult Education in Jerusalem. Here he became active in the social and intellectual life of the Palestinian Jewish community. While Zionism's ideals centered around a return to roots and a wholesome culture, things he had come to value, he alternatively came to oppose their official party policies and conflict with many Zionists' views. For example, during the Arab Revolt of 1936 to 39, when the British government imposed quotas on immigration to Palestine, Buber argued for demographic parity rather than trying to achieve a Jewish majority. He argued for a binational rather than a Jewish state in Palestine, advocating for Jewish-Arab cooperation. His views went against members of the Zionist establishment, and yet he engaged with and enjoyed the cooperation of his political and religious adversaries. Though he emphasized a non-legalistic type of religion, even some of the Orthodox also worked with him. Buber understood that politics were shaped by society itself, and he rejected any hardened ideological formations of the collective. He felt that political extremes failed to recognize humanity, the I and thou in social life. And this is where we began to traverse into his most well-known influence on communication studies, dialogue. Buber is one of the most frequently referenced philosophers of dialogue. Mysticism informed his philosophies on dialogue, of how humans encounter other beings. He was especially interested in communication between the otherness of East and West, Judaism and humanism, national particularity and universal spirit. As a spiritual man in his Jewish faith, much like Kant was informed by his Christian faith, Buber saw an I-thou position with God, where God is truly met and addressed, not just thought of and expressed. He also took this example in relation to encounters between human to human and human to nature. And this is all related to how we become aware. He wrote, quote, "It by no means needs to be a man of whom I become aware. It can be an animal, a plant, a stone. The limits of the possibility of dialogue are the limits of awareness." So what is this I-thou all about? Well, Buber's philosophy of dialogue. Buber saw dialogue as identity forming, meaning that a person is shaped by and rooted in their sense of self through the social structure they exist in and in their communication with others. This goes against someone like Heidegger, who believed that the self-sufficient or self-referential was central to beingness and self-understanding. Buber's dialogic theories of I-thou and I-it were built on the relationship between the self and the other, and therefore the consciousness is based on the understanding of otherness. Buber describes speech as, quote, the great character of men's life with one another. Martin Buber describes three types of communication: technical dialogue, monologue, and genuine dialogue. Technical dialogue is a direct response to a functional need. Monologue is described as being disguised as dialogue between people, but, quote, neither communicates something, teaches something, influences something, or makes a connection with someone, end quote. In other words, monologue is empty talk. Buber emphasized genuine dialogue. Interestingly, the genuine can be spoken or silent communication, as long as, and he says, quote, it has in mind the other or others, and turns to them with the intention of establishing a mutual relation between himself and them, end quote. We experience moments of genuine dialogue as a sort of social flow. Teachers and students can be learning with each other. An audience and an artist can simultaneously be lost in a performance. These are examples of genuine dialogue. These mutual turning toward the other is an I-thou experience. I'm really going to drive that home. He shared an example from his life of an I-thou encounter, one from his childhood, a vivid memory. When he was 11, on his grandparents' estate, they had a stable of horses. He explained how he would often visit a particular dapple gray and stroke the neck of his horse. He wrote, when I stroked the mighty mane, sometimes marvelously smoothed comb, at other times just as astonishingly wild, and felt the life beneath my hand, it was as though the element of vitality itself bordered on my skin. Something that was not I, was certainly not akin to me, palpably the other, the horse. Even when I had not begun by pouring oats for him into the manger, very gently raised his massive head, ears flicking, then snorted quietly, as a conspirator gives a signal meant to be recognizable only by his fellow conspirator, and I was approved. But once, I do not know what came over the child, it struck me about the stroking, what fun it gave me, and I became conscious of my hand. The game went on as before, but something had changed. It was no longer the same thing. A distinction was made. It must be made. I-it dialogue is not the devil. This experience happens frequently when it merely represents an object to you, human or not. I-it encounters serve a very functional purpose. They enable us to negotiate the daily world. Utilitarian and practical exchanges, like going through a drive-through or on a call with a service tech. They can even alternate, like your family doctor might go through a routine physical checkup, I-it, but if they then sit down and engage with you about what concerns you might have or how you're doing, the dimension of an I-thou exchange opens up. Practicing these moments with our friends and loved ones is a beautiful thing. But the ultimate I-thou encounter is when between persons who profoundly disagree, yet respectfully acknowledge one another, and at the same time, remain true to their individual stance. Thinking about how we communicate today, with our hyper-technologies and constant interactions via social media, looking for a form of reciprocity within dialogue may be rare. We spend more time discussing ourselves online rather than truly being present and having dialogic interaction, talking with one another rather than at one another. According to Buber, for genuine dialogue to occur, these things are helpful. One turns toward and attends another's address. One makes the other present. And one responds unreservedly from his or her lived truth, authentically, not just giving lip service. Buber lived through two world wars, and his message is just as important today as we watch unhinged power figures and world leaders violently combating each other, destroying the land they claim to protect, and disregarding human lives. Buber also wrote about this inability to engage in genuine or authentic dialogue with one another, and that it was then, and I argue now, a time which, quote, most urgently makes a demand of us. In a genuine dialogue, each of the partners, even when he stands in opposition to the other, heeds, affirms, and confirms his opponent as an existing other, end quote. Buber is often mentioned in interpersonal communication studies, specifically because of his philosophy on dialogue. He differentiated the dialectic from the dialogic. I know they sound very similar. This is recognizing when we are talking at someone, dialectic. Buber also called this speechifying, versus with someone, what he called dialogic or genuine. For people to come together and build their common society, Buber favored the dialogic approach, with, over dialect, dialectic, at. See, they all sound the same, but they're different. He said, quote, "The life of dialogue is no privilege of intellectual activity, like dialectic. It begins no higher than where humanity begins. There are no gifted and ungifted here, only those who give themselves and those who withhold themselves." End quote. Buber's philosophy of interpersonal communication and his explanation of genuine dialogue is summarized fluidly in his own words here again. Quote, "I affirm the person I struggle with. I struggle with him as his partner. I confirm him as creature and as creation. I confirm him who is opposed to me as him who is over against me," end quote. Buber's work has also influenced cross-cultural and intercultural communication scholars, whose primary focus is managing cultural differences. Cross-cultural and intercultural communicators emphasize the dialogic approach, the talking with others. They're all about honoring and celebrating difference, otherness, and plurality. Dialogical relationships happen when people overcome separateness and individuals grasp their full humanity. I might summarize for myself that I see I-thou as how I relate to all things, the entire universe, because any I-it has the potential to become an I-thou. But I also know never to expect an I-thou to last. I-thou moments happen between the everyday I-its. We're human, and our ability of radical depth and awareness will ebb. When Buber mentions truth, it's with a small t, not a possessed kind of capital T truth, rather a lived truth, existentially realized, similar to Kierkegaard's thinking. Buber said, quote, "In every man, what is right is established in a single and uniquely personal way," end quote. I like this. When he focuses on the dialogical relationship and talking with a person, he's acknowledging that even in conflict or struggle, there can be this recognition and therefore a mutual affirmation rather than alienation of the other. In his later years, Buber became well known, traveling and lecturing extensively in Europe and the United States. Toward the end of his life, he became interested in psychotherapy, and his philosophy of dialogue entered into the discourse of psychoanalysis, no less. Not surprisingly, aspects of his theories on dialogue in that discipline emphasize the need for the patient and therapist to speak and hear each other, rather than the therapist remaining an abstract or distant figure, merely analyzing and taking notes. His work similarly has also become more popular today in approaches to educational theory. I did come to learn some contrasting characteristics of this very human man widely regarded as wise. Surprisingly, this utopian-minded man, who insisted on mutuality, allowed very few people to call him by his first name, would not be disturbed by children playing in the house, and alienated most representatives of the Zionist establishment. What does all of this secondhand information tell me? A reminder that no person is free of flaws, and that those featured on Beautiful Gray Sponge are not immune. Anyone is bound to be disapproved of, either by me and my own opinions and persuasions, or any listeners who might oppose. Regardless, I like to learn from and about. Even so, he seems to have lived his theory of genuine dialogue in such a way that he still nurtured and maintained relationships with Arabs and Christians who might have opposed many of his views. Indeed, many did. Buber practiced his Jewish faith without adhering to any specific doctrine. This, in addition to his opposition to Zionist policies toward the Arabs, isolated him from many other Jewish friends and thinkers. But paradoxically, this also made him their spokesman in the Jewish-Christian dialogue. His Christian opponents found a common ground with him because he could be dialogically open without being dogmatically defined, and discourse could flow. I like how Buber held the idea that self-actualization can involve others, but that he didn't support that this was necessarily forced. He mentions entelechy and the importance of another's journey into self-realization. He said that this was, quote, the help that men give each other in becoming a self, without wishing to impose on the other anything of his own realization, end quote. Healthy relationships are just that, about supporting and encouraging the personal and spiritual growth of the other. Martin Buber corresponded with many of the leading minds of his time and constantly strove for peace. He died June 13, 1965, in Jerusalem. Attending his funeral in Jerusalem, a high state function, a rare event took place. A delegation of the Arab Students' Organization placed a wreath on his grave. If you know me or this podcast well, you'll often notice I make a lot of text-to-text connections. It's the librarian in me. When Buber says, quote, between you and it, there is mutual giving. You say thou to it and give yourself to it. It says thou to you and gives itself to you, end quote. I was reminded of a children's story, What Was I Scared Of? By Dr. Seuss, where the character is scared of something they aren't familiar with, and an I-it seems to be the pervading tone until the end. And here we go.
And there I was, caught in the snide, and in that dreadful place, those spooky empty pants and I were standing face to face. I yelled for help, I screamed, I shrieked, I howled, I yowled, I cried. Oh, save me from these pale green pants with nobody inside. But then a strange thing happened. Why, those pants began to cry. Those pants began to tremble. They were just as scared as I. I never heard such whimpering, and I began to see that I was just as strange to them as they were strange to me. I put my arm around their waist and sat right down beside them. I calmed them down. Poor empty pants with nobody inside them. And now we meet quite often, those empty pants and I, and we never shake or tremble. We both smile and we say hi.
To conclude in Buber's words, all real living is meeting. And that's the life of Martin Buber. If you'd like to learn more about Beautiful Gray Sponge, locate other featured stories, color along now as you listen, thanks to a remarkable artist by the name of Haley Russell. Access my narrated transcripts, or check out my sources. I think it's important to say, where do I get all this information? Simply visit beautifulgraysponge.com. Contribute, if you like. And please share with others. As always, thank you for listening.